Welcome to our brains. Inside of our brains, there are things happening. Those things relate to conversations that we are about to have regarding music and philosophy. This is Sound Mind. We are your hosts, Justin and Stevie.
What's up, everybody?
What's up?
Good morning. I got a Keurig in the studio.
Very nice.
And it's going to save me. I don't know, probably at least 30 to 40 bucks a week.
Yeah.
That's hurts to say out loud, but.
Scary to think about.
Cheers. Still shout out to Awakenings. I'll probably.
Yeah, I did indulge.
And I will at least once a week.
Yeah. But yeah, so your studio was here before. And if you can't see because you're listening, I put my hand up as if to indicate an invisible bar, right?
Right.
And now it's up here. So now I'm indicating a higher place on the bar. If you're watching, you can just see that I'm doing that. But
and it's correct. Yeah, Keurig. We got Starbucks. We got Thomas Hammer. Shout out to Thomas Hammer.
Boom.
We got a variety, plethora.
What a manly name, by the way, Thomas Hammer.
I know. Their marketing's amazing, too.
Yeah.
They look like a international company, but they're not. They're local.
Hmm.
Did you know they're local?
I did not.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're local. I've met Thomas Hammer.
Dude, is he manly?
Is he a lumberjack? He is a man. No. Gosh, that's a rough one to get into. Like, no offense. I love coffee, and I'm a coffee guy. Most people that I know that are entrepreneurs in the coffee industry, I wouldn't give them the adjective manly.
That's fair.
You know.
Or lumberjack.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be a good way to describe them.
Yeah, I mean, like, we could go into this, because, like, okay, for one, your beard is beautiful, right? I wouldn't say it's manly, you know, no offense, you know, it's a great beard.
Right.
Somehow there's something going on in our culture now where it's, like, the thing that used to be manly is, like, you know, this hipster, this, you know, whatever, different cultures. Like, we've made the beard pretty.
Yeah.
Which is great. I love GQ. But yeah, again, coffee, I don't know how I got there. Probably because I associate some of the beards with, you know, good hair with coffee people.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, so.
So what you been up to in this, the week since our last podcast?
A lot of mix down, a lot of mixing down projects, working on your guys' still. And then family life continues. My kids just started basketball.
Nope.
Three of my kids are in basketball this year.
Wow.
My 9-year-old son is, this is his fourth year, so he's a baller. His sister's 10, and she decided she wanted to play on his team this year, so that's cool.
Well, all right.
And then my 5-year-old, my fiery lumber Jack-Jack, Jakiah, we do call him Jack-Jack. He's
cool.
A wild man. This is his first year. And we were just blown away. So he had his first practice when I was in Arizona. And my wife was like, wait till you see this. It's nuts. And I'm like, okay. And so we go. And he's 5. So he's playing on the 5- and 6-year-old team. Israel started when he's 5. And I'm used to these kids are like, you know, they're just getting dribbling down. They can't really control where the ball goes. The hoop is 8 foot high. Most of them can't even make it yet. You know, that's
awesome.
It's really fun to watch. So I go to his first practice, and Jakiah's like switching hands, hitting the left, making like 70% of his shots.
Dang, man.
And I'm like, what is happening? How did you do that? And I think a large part was just because I would drag him along. He's like 3 years old, drag him along to Israel's practices, my older son, and he – just,
analyzing.
He just picked it up, and I think, you know, anyway, he's a baller.
That's pretty dope, dude.
Yeah. I'm excited.
Do I hear a future in the NBA?
Yeah. It's funny, because I didn't know we were playing football, you know, like a week, not a week. Like last year, he couldn't catch anything, Jakiah. I mean, Israel would, you know, be playing football, and he just, I was like, okay, you know. Most of the people in my family are athletic to some degree on my dad's side. It just comes naturally. So I'm like, okay, maybe he's not an athlete. And he's coloring pictures, you know, coloring is getting better. I'm like, oh, maybe that's it. And then he comes out and just LeBron's on his team, you know. So I don't know what this kid's going to do.
Does he even know?
No. And he might change his mind. Who knows? Anyway, he's really good. The artistic thing's coming out too. But we encourage all our kids, you know, you can do whatever you want to do. And you'd be great at what you want. Just make sure you love it. That's a big one.
Yeah, it is a big one.
I get to come home, you know, from work, and my kids often ask me, like, how my day was. And I get to say, it was awesome. I'm doing what I love to do.
Yeah. That's a great thing.
It's such a great thing.
Yeah, there's something that's so special about just being part of, like, the creative process. You know, it just, you know, even if it's you're a small part, like, even if if one of my bandmates comes in, he's got a song written, and he's like, yeah, I'm imagining a guitar part, but I don't know exactly what, and you just kind of noodle something out.
Right.
And they're like, that right there, you know.
Yeah.
It's a great feeling.
Yeah, it is. It's being in that space and creating and being content in the moment, like you're getting something out, the magic is there, and you're not tripping about 4,000 people liking it or, you know, playing a show or whatever, you know. Those things are great, and hopefully they come. Some of them come, but, yeah, being in that creative space. So it's, yeah, I love it, man. This is a new phase of my life, and I'm in that space and getting to, you know, support my family doing it. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's great, and I pray and hope that it just continues to increase.
Would you say you've been increasing in clientele?
Yeah, I have been, and up till this point, I think I started last May or June, so I don't know how many months that is, like 7, 8. In that time, I have not caught up enough to get the promotion out. Mm-hmm. The website's not up. I haven't done any, you know, advertising, any promotion. It's all been word of mouth.
Yeah.
So with that said, I'm excited about how successful it's been already.
Yeah.
And everybody who's come to record has come back. I'd say 80% of the people have come back and done a second thing. And the other ones, 100% of them have talked about it.
Yeah.
You know, so
we definitely have.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a great, you know, that's great to, you know, people, customers are happy and they want to come back and do more and they're excited about their music. And I mean, honestly, that's the money has to happen so I can live. But I mean, to light people's fire and to throw gasoline on whatever fire's there that led them into making music in the meantime, and to re-dream and to re-hope that, no, this can work, we can make it, like, I need to push forward with this. That's probably one of my biggest incentives. Yeah, things I love to see.
I get that.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that I wanted to talk about today was, as we were setting up, I was on Rolling Stone, who I love to hate.
Are you talking about the magazine?
I am.
Okay.
They had a top 50 songs of 2018. And I didn't read the whole list. I just kind of looked over it.
Best songs? Is that what you said?
I think they said best songs. Maybe it was like more like top tracks.
Okay.
I hope that they mean just in popularity. I hope that it's not.
That'd be more like a chocolate covered turd.
It's best songs. 50 best songs is the name of the article. Just check. With such amazing, wonderful contributions to music as Cardi B's "I Like It." Amazing, so good. Yeah, and the number one track was a Drake song, "In My Feelings." Which, again, makes me want to commit suicide a little bit.
Please comment and start a support line for my friend here, Justin.
A GoFundMe, hopefully. The fund to give Justin money so he won't kill himself. Yeah, so sad. Yeah, I mean, so first of all, the 50th track, that was the thing I actually want to talk about the most, was Weezer's Africa cover, which is like the worst cover ever. You said you hadn't heard it.
I don't.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. It's so bad. Anyway, yeah, I just wanted to mention that, because that like legitimately upsets me. Like, out of all of those, none of them were like any artist that you wouldn't know the name of just because they're a celebrity. So that was kind of irritating. Yeah, it's like, what the heck, guys?
Yeah, I'd be curious to hear, you know, what you guys think. Post comments, opinions. I mean, even if you guys don't agree with what Justin's saying, we'd love to hear what you guys think about this. And it's kind of setting us up for what we want to talk about today anyway.
This is true, yeah.
But, you know, one of the points I'd like to bring up just about what you're saying is, you know, how much of that is because whoever's coming up with these lists want you to focus on these artists, these songs, this music, you know.
To control, to some degree, your perception of what's available musically, I think, is an element. And it's not even that I'm not a Drake fan.
Right.
It's that he does some outrageous number of songs a year. I think it's like 26, something like that. He just pumps those babies out. And I'm, like I said, not a huge Drake fan. I don't listen to a lot of his songs or anything. I don't hate the guy, but it all kind of runs together for me. There's not a lot of like variety. It's just quantity, you know. He's reached this certain status, and by releasing a ton of songs, it's almost like he stays relevant. Kind of in that zone. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And that's not artistic. Like, whatever it is, it's not artistic. Maybe it's good marketing or just impressive.
Phone's still on.
Impressive entrepreneurship. I don't even know if that's a word.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it is. It's not necessarily bad, but I wouldn't say that it constitutes being an admirable artistic quality.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. And then the second track was that big track from, and we talked about this too, but it was that big track from A Star Is Born. I forgot the name of the movie. Okay. Yeah.
That was number two on the list?
I believe so, two or three.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, I mean, I think that whole, I don't know, it comes across as being like a portrait, right? You come across it and it's set up in a way that you're supposed to see it, right? Like, it's perfectly posed, like, oh, look at this thing. And that's not, I don't know, when you read, like, especially 50 best songs, right? That's quite a few songs. I mean, of course, that's a small amount of songs in the grand scheme of things, of songs that actually came out. But in terms of genre, it's like it's all really pop, you know?
Yeah.
There's very little wiggle room there. It's like pretty deep trench.
Right. Yeah, it reminds me of when I was young, and I'm 35 now, so that was a while ago. I'm talking like maybe 6, 7, 8 years old. And we're out on the playground. We're playing. We're having fun. And my shoes maybe had 2 stripes on them.
Mm-hmm.
And this kid's shoes maybe had 3 stripes on them. And we didn't even notice that. It didn't matter. We're just playing, having a good time. And somehow, 5th grade, 6th grade, that changed. And then if you had two stripes on your shoes, you weren't cool. You got the knockoff. You got the knockoff shoes from Payless.
Oh.
But I got three stripes. I'm wearing Adidas. I'm in the mainstream. And so all of a sudden there's this like consensus that goes out. You're not as cool. You don't know what's up. Your parents don't have money, or, you know, you're just not in. You don't have a swoosh on your shirt, you know. And I feel that. I feel that way. Somehow we have this consensus that goes out. Like, you're not, if you don't perceive this image how we want you to and how everybody else has bought into, then you're not tracking right.
Right. And I think part of it, too, is, well, to clarify, and I might have said this in an earlier episode, I don't remember, but pop, I don't think pop is bad, necessarily. I think that pop is, you know, even the term mainstream is referring to the flow of water, right? And there's all of these branches that shoot off. And if those represent subgenres, the mainstream is the biggest body, right? It's where
the main source,
the source of all of these subgenres. So That's fine. I don't have a problem with pop as an idea. I think that something that pop does well is it gets to the point quickly and conveys the emotions that it's trying to convey easily, in an easily digestible way, which in and of itself isn't bad, and it's very accessible, which, again, isn't bad in and of itself. The problem is you have to pair that with artistry for it to be convincing to me. In my opinion, isn't the one that matters per se. It's just that I listen to a lot of music, and I don't know if it's a sense that you develop or whatever, but you can just tell. You're like, this is an executive song. Like, this is a song, and then you look up the writing credit or whatever, and it's written by like 8 people, and you look up their names. 2 of them are like songwriters for a career, right? So they get paid by these companies to come in and write a song for Justin Bieber or whatever. And then the other guys are like executive producer people that just kind of go, okay, I need you to do this because it's going to be more appealing.
This is the next thing.
Yeah, and that's gross, you know?
And our opinion matters.
Yeah, our opinion matters.
It's disgusting.
Yeah.
Gross. Your opinion matters too, and if it differs with ours, we'll still honor that, but we think it's nasty.
I think it's nasty biz.
You know, and I, again, when we talked about, you know, is pop good and all these things in previous episodes, check them out if you haven't seen those. I hadn't really digested or meditated on the subject, but now over time, you know, I think more on it. And we, you know, pop music being popular music, I almost want to say, you know, what pop music has become.
Mm.
Because to what you're saying and it being shallow and easy, digestible, and that not being bad necessarily, for the most part, I think that's accurate with what's been in the mainstream. But there has been pockets of time where that was not the case. And it still was popular music, but it took a different form, you know.
Yeah.
So...
Well, I think a great example is the Beatles, right? Super popular, super mainstream, super easily digestible, but still genuine. For example, one of my favorite songs by them, Eleanor Rigby, it's like 2 minutes, I think, and it's just this string quartet, I think, and they're singing this song about how basically – I don't know. If I had to sum up Eleanor Rigby, it's just 2 anecdotes between choruses about how people just forget how to love and then they die alone. That crap gets you, right? That's genuine. That's looking at your mortality and questioning your life choices.
That's deep.
That's good. I think whatever it was, the number 3 or 2 track by Cardi B, I Like It, is a rehash of a concept that we've heard 1,000 times, you know. And if that genuinely came out of her artistic spirit, I don't know, man. I don't
question what you're doing.
Yeah, I don't think
which
that
is
you
hard
can,
to do when you give her a number two spot on a list of best songs.
That is true, and I don't think you can compare them. I don't think you can compare Eleanor Rigby, just as an example. I mean, that's not the only song I like, but
they're not in the same class.
No, not at all. Right. Not at all. And and I don't know, but the Beatles were huge, you know? Like, the Beatles were the definition of pop at the time. Like, they revolutionized pop rock.
Right. They, and I'm not quite sure year when Eleanor Rigby came out, but the Beatles, they did. I think what we're talking about here, they were like the forerunners of the type of pop that we're talking about.
Yeah.
They did take a turn that not every artist does these days in their career, where they came and they're kind of like the first boy band, right? And then they started, their music started being influenced, you know. Yeah. And I've heard some different things. I don't know much about the Beatles or their life. I know there were some drugs involved and some
drugs. What? The Beatles?
Influences by Bob Dylan and different people.
Yeah, you could definitely hear that, yeah.
And some of that was really good for musically, I think. Like, some of that transition was some of their best music that I like more than some of their other stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm not sure where that song fits into that, but
I honestly don't remember. I mean, I'm not hugely knowledgeable on the Beatles. It was just like a couple of years back, like, a friend of mine let me borrow his, like, Beatles anthology, and I just kind of listened to them. And so I've got all these random tracks that I liked, and I would listen to them a bunch.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. Yeah, so I kind of wanted to talk about, present this idea again. It's been brought up before, of the motivation for where music is coming from. And this can be applied to art and a broad spectrum, but we'll keep it narrowed down to music for us because we're sound mind. Mm-hmm. So, where does music come from? What's the motivation? And I think of the blues, and this got stated before, but in the blues, like, you have an oppressed, enslaved African people who have this heritage with drums and music. Music was huge in Africa amongst the tribes and all that. And the oppression and everything they were going through, a sound is birthed, right? This blues starts coming out of this people group. And it's the cry of their heart, right? It's the, I'm making this. This is how I feel. It's just bleeding a sound out that's musical, and then you have the blues, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody's thinking about how many tracks do I want on this album, and who's my target audience, and
yeah.
And I'm not saying all those things are bad. They're things that we should consider at different points, but if those are your main motivation, this is completely oppositional to that. This is how I feel. Here we got the blues. It's crazy to think, you know, that slavery has set the bar and changed music forever. What we hear still today is you can't get away from the foundations of, you know, classical blues. And anyway, so again, this cry to express and to make art sets a trend, right? And then there's this other side where we get into the mode of, okay, I'm going to sit down and I am going to write a song that is directed toward 12 to 24-year-olds, and I'm going to use this really clean chord progression that resolves and is palatable, and I'm going to have the sound on the chorus, and, you know, all these thoughts are going on before ever there's a note played.
Yeah.
And I'm going to probably write it about a girl because, or a guy. That's what people are going to want to hear.
Yeah.
And so anyway, it's, you kind of get the point. But the idea is there is a trend that's already set, and I'm going to create a song that fits within that trend, as opposed to the other where it's like I'm going to bleed out what I'm feeling.
Yeah.
And that ends up setting the trend.
I think that word bleed is an important one because it implies like some degree of, I don't know if suffering is the right word, but you know, especially like the blues as an example, it's coming from like this deep, deep place of like, you almost don't want to go there.
Yeah.
Like,
right. Or just especially letting people see.
Yeah.
You go there in front of people.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Like that's just messed up. And it's like it's got to come out, and so it comes out. And that's not to say that the only legitimate songs are if you've suffered that much. That's not what we're saying, I don't think. I mean, to me, it's just it has to be genuine. It has to come from you, and it has to come from deep down in. You're just going to scoop it up, just scoop it right out. And it's nasty. And everybody's like, oh, my God, that's nasty. But it's, like, genuine.
Yeah.
And that's
genuine. I think that's a key word.
Yeah.
Genuine and vulnerable. Yeah. Because you think of, like, bluegrass. Bluegrass is another style of music. You know, faster tempo. It's more – there's multiple different ways to process your life. You know, when I think of bluegrass as a whole, for the most part, I think more celebratory, you know, but again, a lot of that is, you know, it's very authentic. It's not as ugly.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that must hurt. You know, it's,
yeah,
you know, let's celebrate. Let's have a good time. This is what's happening, and I'm happy about it. Still, it's genuine.
Yeah.
It's vulnerable. It's an inside look. It's, you know, I'm glad you enjoy it, but I didn't write it for you.
Yeah.
I wrote it because I needed to, and I hope that you come into this and celebrate with me through this.
Yeah.
You know, music.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah. And we keep talking about, it's something that we've brought up a bunch of times. We keep talking about the Grammys. But every time we look over, like, the list of nominees, we're just like, eh. Like, there's not a whole lot to break down there. There's not a whole lot to talk about. So it's kind of like, And I think that's why. I think it's just because we look at that and we're like, that's the status quo. That's normal. You know, there's not a whole lot of exciting stuff happening there. And the stuff that is happening that's exciting, you kind of get the impression that they just did it because they felt like they had to. Like, okay, if we don't nominate these people, it'll be obvious that this is all rigged. That this is all just a show, right? So they nominate certain people for certain things just enough that people don't question whether or not it's just a sham, but... That's how it comes across to me. I don't know. It always kind of has, but...
Yeah. And God forbid, like, I vote for a song that didn't directly come out of my recording studio or my company.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, what do you guys think? You know, post comments, add to the discussion. We'd love to hear what you think. And if you are somebody who doesn't stray far off the top 40 on the radio... Please, I plead with you, pick songs that you like in that top 40, and whatever genres those are, go search for artists that maybe you've never heard of, and dig into some of those side streams.
Yep.
And see what you come up with. You might fall in love with music all over again. Love, do you feel it in the air? Yeah. So, I mean, with that said... can you think of times like that you wrote a song or you know, these moments of like what's, I kind of want to ask two questions, but I'll let you answer whatever part of it you want to.
Yeah.
You know, one, I'm just going to, puke out some stuff.
Cool.
So, you know, what's your writing process look like? Do you remember a time when, you know, you're bleeding something out and that came out as a song? You know, and if you've got something that comes to mind, maybe giving us an inside look into that.
Pretty much my songwriting process is I'll write lyrics in the moment, and it's like, okay, I'm in this thing, and I'm gonna write this thing out, and then it's garbage, I throw it away. And then I find it again, like, 6 months later, and I'm like, I just wrote this other thing musically that would go to this, but this is crappy, so I'm gonna rewrite it again. And then I revitalize it, kind of make it mesh a little bit more. But yeah, I would say that my music and lyrics come from a similar vein, but not necessarily at the same time. Like I don't write something and then go, the words are just coming to me right now. That's not usually how it works. That does happen sometimes, but usually the words come to me later, or I will have already written like the basis for the words, and then the music comes later. But because, you know, it, kind of going along with what we were talking about, it's very much like a deep dive. Like I'll hit like a funk and I'll explore it a little bit, you know, just kind of you write something out, you noodle on it for a little while. You don't necessarily force it, but you just explore it. Like, yeah, you're not trying to force yourself to be productive in a traditional way. You're trying to explore the, I don't know, like where it comes from, you know? Yeah. And I think that's what kind of...
It's like processing, like camping there for a while, like really going through it, and why do I feel this way? What do I even feel? You know, that's right. Another thing. Like, yeah, we don't stop very long to actually even feel anything. We're so distracted, yeah, like it just gets built up, and some of it's just being quiet enough to explore. Like, what? Oh my God, I feel whatever it is.
Yeah, and a lot of my stuff is very like... I keep using the word nihilistic. I don't know if that's the right word. But essentially, it's very just kind of like exploring this idea that we're all like faking it. We don't know what we're doing, which I think is absolutely true. And we're just kind of like, well, this might work out. Like, let's try it. And just how we're all kind of running blind to some degree. We're all kind of just, I would say that's that kind of vein is where I pull a lot of stuff. And that's usually because of an experience that I've had in regards to that, of not knowing what I'm doing, or observing someone else not knowing what they're doing, or observing people stuck in a behavior. Right. So like they just do the same thing over and over and it's terrible and their life is falling apart and you're watching it happen and you're like stuck because there's nothing you can do will intervene for them. Like they have to decide. And so, yeah, a lot of my material kind of comes out of that. Just observing and almost stewing, you know, this is like a fermenting thing. Where you start your stew, and then you turn the stove off, you put the lid on, leave for like a month, come back. Rant. Yep, it's getting rancid, put it back on, come back 6 months later, and oh, yeah, now it's disgusting, and then it's a song now.
Right. Yeah, that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. I guess. Yeah, so I would say... I mean, without having any particular context, because I haven't put any songs out, but when we do, it'll be like, oh, yeah, that's what I was talking about. Yeah. That's exactly what it is. So,
can you remember, like, a specific situation that you had that triggered a funk or something and a specific song that maybe was birthed out of that or the beginning elements or...
Well...
I'm asking you. To be genuine and vulnerable.
Yeah, it's kind of...
to our audience.
Yeah. It's difficult without having context, but I started writing this, and, you know, we both talked about how, you know, we're very skeptical of the Christian music industry. And I started writing this project a while back that was kind of a faux worship thing. I don't know how to describe it exactly, but basically it was taking, like, musically it's very worshipy, mm-hmm. but it's very skeptical. Mm-hmm. It's like, I think the book Habakkuk in the Old Testament, it starts with, I believe, Habakkuk himself questioning God to some degree. He's not doing it like questioning the existence of God. It's questioning God's motives, like God's actions. And what you think is going to happen is God's response is going to be, how dare you, right? How dare you question what I... I'm the ultimate authority. How dare you question my actions, my motives, whatever. But his response is much more subdued. It's a much more personal response. It's, I understand where you're coming from, but there's, you don't understand because you're in your situation. And it's not admonishing, right? And so that was kind of a place that I was in. And I wrote this whole, because like a lot of worship songs, here's how they go. They go, God, I'm drowning in the water, and you're just above the waves. Please reach down to the water and pull me up so that I can not drown. That is like 98%. Of every worship song on the radio, I swear. And then there's always this response of like, yeah, thank you, God, for saving me and blah, blah, blah. And
now I can walk on the water.
Now I can walk on the water with you. We can be together. Yay. Like all of the songs I wrote for it, I've written like five. None of them end that way on purpose. Because in that moment that – that's not always what happens. It doesn't always resolve like that. So to pretend like it does is at best silly. You know, it's at best it's very one-dimensional. Because we're trying to condense, like, if you're trying to condense your entire history with, you know, if you're a Christian, you're trying to condense your entire history with God into a 3-minute song, I think that's very foolish. So to me, this EP was kind of the anti that. It's not that those moments have not occurred for me. It's that those are highlighted so often, I wanted to avoid that.
Right. So, well, it's interesting. The first thing that comes to my mind is, even with that, is it a similar thing like what we're talking about with the Grammys and with pop culture? Is I've made this presentation for you. Mm. And I want you to perceive it a certain way. Mm. And even in the Christian music realm,
we're doing
the exact same thing as pop culture.
Totally.
It's got a little different spin on it. But again, like, what is your experience if you are a Christian or whatever religion you are? What's your experience with, you know, your belief in God or whatever higher power you might believe in or not.
Yeah.
It's not clean and polished, and there's probably mixed with a lot of questions. So in the context of like you're talking about Christianity, if 90%, I would say probably nobody's summary of their walk with God from beginning to end looks like a Christian top 40 song.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, you know, why are you trying to say that that's the truth?
Yeah.
And we're all feeling something different, but we're saying something, and none of our real lives are lining up with that.
And it's so funny because it seems to me that it's so opposite what Scripture says about people, right? So we have all these songs about how, yeah, and then God came along and my life was perfect and everything. And the reality is that that's just not true. And then Scripture does not back that up at all in terms of Scripture's revelation of, I don't know, whatever way you want to look at it, of mankind's nature or God's nature. None of that lines up with the Christian top 40 song.
Yeah. You know, what's it's interesting to me because the Bible has this book in it that is full of songs.
What?
Yeah. I don't know if you know or anybody knows, especially top 40 artists in the Christian realm. No offense.
Yeah.
It's called the Psalms.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of different writers, but, you know, if we're looking for structure and framework and genuineness, there's a word for that. It's not genuineness, but look at the Psalms, and, you know, a lot of them are David, God, why have you left me? Everything's falling apart.
Yeah.
You have... How long will you make me suffer for the wrongs of my life? And the cords of death wrap around me and strangle the air out of my lungs. You know, is all that true? It feels like it for David in that moment.
Yeah.
And again, it's genuine. It's vulnerable. It's he's not going, you know what? I can't wait till this hits the top 10 in Jerusalem. I wonder how many Israelites are going to be bumping this track.
You know, this, the hot new track from King David.
Right. David's like, I'm going to die. Right. And if I don't scream, you know, it's going to happen sooner than later. I have this harp, so I might as well scream to it.
Right. And I'm not trying to, you know, religify this podcast or anything. But this is one of my favorite psalms. So this is the second half of Psalm 88. It's just a quick little paragraph here. Just to give you an idea of, like, where I'm coming from in this.
Yeah.
But I cry to you for help, Lord. In the morning my prayer comes before you. Why do you reject me and hide your face from me? From my youth I have suffered and been close to death. I have borne your terrors and I am in despair. Your wrath has swept over me. Your terrors have destroyed me. All day long they surround me like a flood. They have completely engulfed me. You have taken from me friend and neighbor. Darkness is my closest friend. That's it. That's how it ends. That's where they leave it.
Not in a good place.
Not at all. Yeah. But that's what he was writing about in the moment. That's what was happening to him. And it was genuine. And it's in the freaking Bible.
And I just want to point out that David was referred to in the Bible as a man after God's own heart.
Yeah.
So we should take a lesson.
Yeah, especially as a Christian artist, like, take some cues, you know?
Right.
Jeez. Yeah, it pisses me off, man.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest. Like, the Christian music industry is just, like, freaking annoying.
Yeah.
Music industry in general, but I guess, you know, the Christian music industry is part of it. Like, it's all part of the same same pitfalls and whatnot.
Yeah, so I've written several hip-hop projects, and I don't know how many songs I've written. I've probably written, it doesn't matter. Anyway, I've written a lot.
Yeah.
But there are times when I just put on a beat, like I feel a certain thing, and I find a beat that feels that same way, right? I'm looking for a landing spot, something that agrees with what I feel. And I'll turn that beat on, I'll throw a mic up, I'll put it in record, and I will just, whatever it is, celebrate or rage or whine or whatever it is, I'll put that on record, and I'll just freestyle on a microphone whatever I'm feeling and just blah, you know, and I'll run through that track and just record, you know, multiple different sessions of the same track, you know, sometimes 5-6 times. More for just a processing thing, but there are times I go back and I listen, and again, I haven't stopped to, like, think, how am I feeling? What's going on with me? It's usually at a time when it's like, enough is enough. I've got to, And then I go back and I listen, and then you can hear, like, oh, this is what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a common theme. There's, like, I'm dealing with something that I need to get out, and so a lot of times, like, I'll start with that, and then I'll kind of get the main concept, and there's some parts I like or I don't like, and that'll become a song.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just my gut-wrenching puke session. Yeah. And most of the time it is gut-wrenching. It's...
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish... Not wish. Yeah. I need to learn how to write happier music. I tend to write a lot when I... don't feel good.
Yeah.
As opposed to, it's hard for me to write a happy song. Let's just put it that way.
No, I get that. I get that for
but
sure.
But I'm happy a lot, which is interesting. I just don't think about making music. And I think a part of it is the way I started writing poetry was similar.
Mm. You know,
gut-wrenching. Like, I'm writing because I need to get out this stuff. But, yeah. So now what?
I don't know, man.
Yeah. Well, I guess, should we just end it on that note?
The bitter, disappointed, angry note that we ended it on?
Well, I mean, I could read another psalm, but, you know.
Yeah.
Where David says, "You've always been faithful, and your loving kindness will follow me for all the days of my life." So
we could do that.
Yeah. It's interesting, too, because you look at it like, oh, man, you can get me into that. But
Maybe for next week.
Next week, yeah. Yeah, but I will just make the point. We look at things as black and white,
mm-hmm.
like the Bible, right? It's from most Christian values would say, like, this is the word of truth concerning life.
Right.
So you have David saying, your terrors, right? Basically, your terrors have followed me and I am going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Your terrors have followed me all my life. And then you got another psalm that says, your loving kindness has followed me all of my life. Now, those are very contradicting statements, right?
Yeah.
So maybe sometimes things aren't as black and white as we try to make them. Because both yeah. statements to David in his personal life, I would imagine, were very true in the moment.
Yeah, exactly. It's very much a perspective thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're allowed to have that.
Perspectives?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're allowed to change.
Perspectives are like belly buttons. Most people have them.
Okay. Awesome. Take it easy. And comment, please. Subscribe, follow all the stuff below on the format that you are listening on or watching.
We'll see you next time.
Till next time.